Sometimes it doesn't pay. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. Sometimes it does not pay. I had a dream last night, and you know, in dreams you can do anything you want to do. And so in my dream, I was just working away, and I was working away on our investments, and I was working away with money investments of various kinds, and I was working away on some undefinable building, but the building was quite something. And it's quite magnificent, in fact. And it was just as beautiful a building as you could ever have, the most beautiful building you could ever imagine. And the building got better, and it became more and more of value. And then the time came that all the people who had value in the building abandoned it. And I was left holding the building, owning the entire building. Well, now, the entire building had a worth of some, $800 billion or something like that, you know. And so I decided, well, I'll sell the building. So I sold the building, and I didn't sell the upper floor of the building because I wanted to give that to the people who had worked for me and let them have the upper floor of the building, which was worth, you know, quite a few $1 billion in itself. But I sold it all for $800 billion. And then here I am with all this money, you know. And I thought to myself, now, what am I going to do with all this money? I don't need anything. I don't want anything. I don't have any desires. Well, let's see. I could give it to people I love, or give it to people I know. Okay. So, to each one of my staff, I gave $4 billion. You know, out of 400, that's quite nice. $4 billion. So, each one of the staff went off and had a happy time. And then I decided, well, okay, I've never really done anything for my blood relatives, so I'm going to go to each one of my blood relatives and give them $4 billion. And so that's just to the living relatives. Now, to the relatives from my sister and my aunts and my cousins and my uncles and my brothers and so forth, and my son and my wife, ex-wife and stuff, each one of them got $4 billion. Okay, now, my son's son got $4 billion, and my son's wife got $4 billion. You know, what the heck? And so, my ex-wife, she got $4 billion, and then my sister got $4 billion, and then each of her kids got $4
billion. Wow.
And each of her kids' kids got $4 billion. And each of her kids' kids' kids got $4
billion.
So, I mean, you know, it helps me get rid of this stuff here. And so then I went to any aunt or uncle that I could find that was still... I didn't do it myself. I mean, what the heck? I had staff who were out searching for these people. And so they found all these people, and they were quite happy. And... then I thought to myself, well, now, here they've got this. Now, Mark had a girlfriend, and his girlfriend was a nice girl, but when she was a youngster, her parents put money on stocks and bonds for her, and so when she had enough money and everything to graduate from college and what have you, and then from there on she went on. Well, there, what happened was that she had a couple $1 million or more, you know, and she was quite wealthy. So she dawdled with her boyfriends and you know, led them on and so forth. But she didn't go out and do anything creative. Oh, she was sponsoring causes and stuff like that, animal causes and animal rights and ecology and what have you. But she was living a very negative life, you know, against everything, you know. And so she's not very happy. Now, that was just one illustration of how having money, so much money that you're raised with, and you're not taught how to use it, is not a benefit. Now, people, children basically, who live in wealthy family with wealthy parents, who have earned the money as they went along, they learned how to invest it and spend it and get benefit from it and joy from it. And they didn't think they were so good because they had it. They were better than other people. They just had it and could do what they wanted to. Well, that was a benefit to them. There was a show one time, years ago. It's on the radio. It's called The Millionaire. And every evening, that is every time the show was on, I think it was once a week or more, the millionaire would have his butler go to somebody that the millionaire, that the billionaire, the rich man, had his butler go to someone that he felt he wanted to bless or help. And so there were several criteria that the butler had to observe, and he wouldn't tell the people, but he just observed it. And if the people were, you know, good people by the rich man's standards, then they'd get the money. Well, many people were good people, and they had nothing, and they got all this money, and they were besieged by people who wanted to help them spend it, and they it made life worse for them. Life was wonderful before they got the money, but after they got the money, they were just besieged by people who wanted to help them spend it. Well, this is true. This is true. We get besieged by telemarketed people calling us, wanting to help us spend our money, you know. And they say, you ordered this thing, or you told us to call you about this. We didn't. That's just their come on, you know. And so we hang up, and they don't call back. If they really meant to call back, if they really, it was, hey, wait, you really did do this, you know. But it was a come on, so they don't call back. Now, in my dream last night, I dreamt I gave this money to all these people, and I thought to myself, what have I done? What have I done? I have given this to these people who perhaps were going to be creative, dynamic, and positive in some beautiful way. If I were to give that money to my son, and he, in a very, not primitive, but in a very simple way, is going about developing his aircraft business and so forth, and he's very proud of what he's doing, and he's doing it very well, and it's not going gung-ho, but it's going along very smoothly. And if he were to get a great deal of money, would he stop his inventive genius, which is his really great joy? Would he stop his flying? Would he all of a sudden become the caretaker for $4 billion? $4 billion is a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Or would he turn into a wisecracker and say, I don't want to worry about that money. I'm going to hire someone to take care of it, and I'm going to go on doing my life. Mm-hmm. I'll use parts of it, you know, but I'm not going to manage that money. I'm not going to take my life managing that money. I'm going to have the bank do it, or somebody else, you know, or a financial counselor or something, you know. And so then he goes back to what he really loves. But so often we go away from what we really love because money causes us to look in other directions. We no longer are satisfied with a simple car. We want a gorgeous car. Well, $4 billion, you can well afford that, you know. And we no longer are happy with a simple, modest home that serves our purposes beautifully and helps us entertain our real friends beautifully. But we go and buy some gorgeous house. We go buy some large estate. We go, and then we spend all our time managing our estate, managing these things, you know. And how fascinating. We saw Sabrina, and on Sabrina, this family managed this tremendous estate, which was maybe billions of dollars. And I don't mean just the house, but I mean the business and everything else. Well, the one boy was a playboy, and he was having fun. But why was he having fun? He was having fun because his father never appreciated him. His father always pushed him aside and did it himself. He managed the business himself. He did these things himself. He said, you're a playboy. And he made him a playboy. So the other son wasn't easily pushed down. The other son kept nosing into his dad's business, kept sticking his nose on his computer and on his contometer and working on the figures and wanting to know about these things. And, well, the father had to tell him, you know, when he was that curious, that demandingly curious. Well, as time went on, the one boy spent all his time managing the affairs of everything. And he's very efficient. He had everybody very well organized, but he had no fun. He had no fun because he didn't think he could afford to take time from the business to enjoying all the benefits of the business. And here, he was raised in money. He was raised in, and so what was his fun? His fun was running the business until somebody tickled his funny bone and said, really, sensitivity is fun. Caringness is fun. Smelling the roses is fun. Seeing the beautiful flowers, seeing the beautiful, hey, who owns all this? We own all this. Well, when you own everything, when do you have time to stop and smell the roses? And so this was the problem that family had. And of course, they were a story, and perhaps they were true, and perhaps they're not. More likely they were true. But what would happen to all of my relatives if I gave them all this lavish portion of money? You know? Nothing happened to me, because I just let it compound. I just let it grow, and as I let it grow, it was there for me. And you say, well, Herb, that was just a dream. No, that's how I conduct my life. That's how I conduct my life. We talked with a man the other day, and he was telling us how he had some major business, and he had major money, and he had done all these major things, and he was such a big and important man. And then he didn't tell us what the problem was, but he went downhill. And he went downhill until he was crying on the floor, and he was, you know, moaning, and his life was useless and endless. We don't need to know what the problem was, but he had a problem. Now, why would he have a problem if he was so successful? Because he didn't take time to do what he had to do. Well, finally, he found out that he had to give some time to his personal life, to his meditative time, to his spiritual awareness of who he was. And when he started doing that, then the money was no longer important. Even the task was no longer important. What was important was how he was using his genius, how he was using his talent. And that's what he's learning. He still hasn't learned all the way, because he still says, I'm big money, I'm this, you know. When you're big money, you don't say that. When you go to Bill Gates, he doesn't say, I'm running Microsoft, I'm running this here, I'm running that. He doesn't say that. He just says, hi, let's play a game of chess. So you go to his house and play a game of chess at night, you know. Well, aren't you into your business? Well, no. Well, would you teach your kids to play chess? Oh, sure. I teach them to play whatever games they want. And I teach them to play on the computers and do things too. I teach them to have fun, to enjoy themselves. Well, your kids are each worth, you know, $10 or $12 billion, you know. $10 to $12 billion in, you know, what their value is. Each kid. When are you going to teach them how to use that money? Oh, they're learning. They're learning. I'm teaching them, enjoy every moment of life. And just because you've got money in the bank doesn't mean you have to spend it. And it doesn't mean you don't have to spend it either. But Bill Gates's kids will be secure in mind. They'll be secure in attitude. And so will all others. But this is what, if I could, I would teach to my relatives and share with them. Well, yes, this is what I would do. And I didn't do it last night, but I would do it today. I would create a cadre of men and women who are idealists, who know how to handle money, who are MBAs, you know, business science, and who are exquisite at this. Their integrity is impeccable. And I would hire them to manage the money for my relatives. They would go along with the money. Now, the relatives can do anything they want. They can take the whole $4 billion and plunge it in nothing, you know, if they want to. Or they can do... But this advisor is going to be right there as their personal financial friend, telling them what is beneficial, how to make money work, how to make money be a blessing to others, how to have a philanthropic activity of giving out to others without making others limited or put down by your gift and things like that. And you see, I left the upstairs of that house to all of the people who had been working with me, and I wonder what they've done. Do you think perhaps they sold that too and moved on to something? I wonder what they've done. And I wonder what they've done. And then you know what the thought comes to me? Who cares? That's their business. They were part of the show. And they were in the show while the show was being developed. But my relatives weren't. And my family, perhaps, who is my real family here, weren't. But just imagine, Ellen, we could go out and buy a publishing plant, you know, some fantastic publishing house, and then have them do a remake on all of our books, have them do a proofing of it, or a upgrading of it, you know.
Editing
of it. Yeah, have them do a new editing. But it'd have to be in our philosophy. And then republish them, and republish them broadly, almost like the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi did, you know, or whoever that group was.
Ramakrishna.
Hare Krishna, yeah. And they published the books, and because somebody gave them a big amount of money, and they gave it to virtually everybody. Everybody. And they had kids going around the world passing them out at airports and everybody else, you know. And now, I would say that out of 100 books, maybe 3 or 4 are being read. Well, if you take out of 1 million books, which they quite likely published, and let's say, what percentage would that be? 3%, that'd be 300 million, we say 1 million books?
Yes, 300,000.
300,000 books were read.
That's a lot.
Which would be quite something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, when you talk small percentages, you think that it's not a big deal, but it's really quite a big deal. So if each one of our books we were able to make available and allow people to have that experience, what a wonderful gift that would be to them. What a wonderful blessing it would be to them. Now, whether they do or whether they don't is not the point. The point is we give, and even today we're giving. With all of our scholarships to our students around the world and all of our other helpfulness that we're giving to them, and many students are paying. And they are making it possible for us to give the scholarships. And this is what it's all about. We are a giving organization, we are a giving group, but we're not giving so we damage another person by lowering their esteem, by causing them to have temptation which might be hurtful to them. You see, these are things you have to be very careful of, that you don't purposely put people in harm's way, or yourself. Feeling, aren't I good? You know, I stuck in my thumb and pulled out a plum. And, and we have to be very careful, because it's just like my son's girlfriend. She was so proud that she could just sort of flick men around at the, because she had so much money. And she would take them out and she would go to places and pay the way and stuff like that. And then when she'd tire of them, she'd just fluff them off and go on and have some other ones, which is lovely, you know. But it's, and of course, if you stop to think about it, isn't that what men are doing? Men have money, and then they have girlfriends, and when they don't want the girlfriend anymore, they get another girlfriend, and they go spend money on them. That's the same thing. Why shouldn't women be able to do that, too, if that's their choice, you know? Isn't it something? We have such a criteria about men and women. We have such an attitude about them, saying women can do this and men can do this and women can't do this and men can't do that. And it's so silly. But that was quite a dream. And I woke up and I was in quite a sweat because I was thinking, have I missed anybody? am I getting all my relatives? Are there any relatives living? Even Ray's adopted son, you know, and I never met him, you know, and stuff like that, and whatever. But I went to all lengths in mentally reaching out and giving away everything because it wasn't important to me. And isn't that exciting? Mm-hmm. Isn't that an exciting adventure? But you see, in the adventure, do the morals stand up? And like the man said to us, he said, I didn't understand why certain things happened to me. He says, but little by little I'm understanding. I didn't understand why I lost my business and I lost this and I lost that, and you know, I didn't understand. He said, but now I'm understanding. And I thought of saying to him, I was thinking that for a while I didn't understand why things happened to me too, why challenges came along to me, why I was limited for a time. And because it wasn't true, and I could just stand up for the truth of it. And so, are you going to fight because it wasn't true, or are you just going to be purity and honesty and goodness in whatever you do? And did I open doorways for many, many people because of that experience?
Yes.
Now, did Michael Jackson open the doorway for many, many people because of his experience? Whether he was a pedophile or a bad person in that way or not, I think not. But I also think the parents put their children into that situation because they were trying to cause a problem in which they could get money out of it. And whether Michael Jackson actually did anything that was improper, just being a man with lots of money was improper, you know. Mm-hmm. And that is what brings people to this. And we sometimes are afraid to do things because we're afraid we're going to be misunderstood. And I can assure you, if what you're doing is fun and beautiful and gracious and magnificent, you'll be misunderstood. Because the queen is misunderstood why she does things. If a queen doesn't let her children go and associate with the commoners while the prince and princesses are growing up, they think, doesn't she think she's snooty? Doesn't she think she's better than anybody else? Well, no. She is a queen, and she is raising her child or children as a queen. And she is raising them in the house of the kingdom, of the king's palace. And the children who are on the street do not have the king's power. The children on the street do not have the responsibility of running the country in front of them. Now, if you knew you were raising your child and he is When he was ready, he will be the President of the United States. You knew you were raising him for them. What would you do for him? Would you send him to go out playing with the kids in the street? Would you waste his time doing things that were not beneficial to his highest and greatest development? That's why parents who have children who are musically inclined try to get their children to spend as much time as they can training in their music. And the children are happy for it later. And if the parents do it well, then the children are happy for it while it's happening because they don't feel like they're being denied anything. They know, hey, what do you want? You want your piano or you want the basketball? You know, you can have both. You can have a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But the piano is going to be your forte, you know. So, that was my dream. Mm. And it's quite exciting. A lot more to it. But it was just the development of the embellishments of it. And if you had had such an opportunity, such a dream, such a purpose, what would you have done? How would you have handled it? What would you have done if you had all this infinite amount of billions of dollars, $400 billion, and, you know, would you want to include your family right away, or would you not? What would you want to do? You see, does it belong to anybody?
No.
What is it? Who does it belong to? It belongs to your distribution of it, your utilization of it, your use of it. So you go to the United States, and you say, Mr. Obama. And of course, he works in trillions of dollars. Mr. Obama, I would like to buy the Treasury. And I would like to run the Treasury. And Mr. Obama says, have at it.
Be my guest.
Be my guest, yeah. But no, really, many countries would love you to handle their Treasury, you know, and make your funds available to them. But think about it however you wish, but in your thinking about it, just remember, you don't want it. You do not want with wealth a burden. You want with wealth opportunity to be magnanimous, philanthropic, outgoing, outgiving, sharing, abundant, but not if you can help it at all. And it, certainly you'll make many mistakes, but not to hurt anybody. And you have to be so careful. You have to be so careful. The Rockefellers train their children on a little bit of money to make it grow. And they made it grow. In their day, it was a penny. And they gave pennies to their children, and their children put it in the bank, and their children learned to make it grow. And when their children took over the family fortunes and business, they didn't need it. They didn't want it. They just enjoyed it. And they used it beautifully. So, with that in mind, I'm giving you, right now, the kingdom. I'm giving you the possibility for you to think positive thoughts. And by positive, think thoughts that are what you'd like to see happen in your world. I'm giving you the opportunity to do that right now. And as you do that, you will have every experience you could ever want. Now, what experience do you want? And this is the big issue for all of us. $400 billion seems outrageous. You have a mind which has the capacity to conceive of so much more than $400 billion could ever conceive of. And what would you do with it? what you're doing with it. You're saying, I can't do this, I can't do that, I haven't got this idea, I don't know what to do, I'm stupid, you know, and the world is terrible, there's wars out there, there's hatred out there, there's things, and you can't do anything about it, that's other people doing it. You see, you forget. I have just enunciated you as God, as the creator of your world. I've just enunciated you as the ideal being. And what did God do creating the world according to the Bible, you know? He just abundantly went out and brought it about and gave it everything. And what is it that the Bible spoke of? I give humanity, mankind, dominion over all. Dominion over all. Now, are you ready to take that dominion over all right now? You can. And are you a good God? Are you a good caretaker of what you have dominion over? Well, if you have dominion over your thoughts, and you think your thoughts are not good, then you don't have very good dominion. If you're a caretaker over your thoughts, and you think you have good thoughts, then you're a good caretaker. You're a good dominion. And I see each of you with good dominion now and always. Because, and not only because, but including, I love you, I love you, I love you.